This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Adrienne Hill. We started this hour with a conversation about choices, the choice to keep accounts hidden from your partner or your spouse. And we make decisions about money all the time. Turns out money, or the lack of money, changes the way we make those decisions. That's according to a new book by Sindel Mulyanadhan. He's an economics professor at Harvard and co-author of the book Scarcity. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about your research into the way that poverty changes the way we make decisions.
The way we started on this research was there was a set of troubling facts around how the poor make decisions. Everything from people not taking medications to the way people parent, you know, in all of these diverse scientific literatures, people had found that the poor make worse decisions. That's troubling because some of the obvious explanations for that are just things that we kind of refuse to accept, that somehow the poor as people are worse decision makers.
Right.
So the starting point for our research was really to say, what if we flip this question on its head? What if it's not that the poor as people are worse decision makers, but instead, what if it's that poverty makes everyone a worse decision maker?
And how did you go about testing it?
We had two different tests. One of them took place in a mall in New Jersey, of all places, where we took a bunch of people of various incomes, and we gave them some standard tests of brain function, like we measured their IQ, we measured what psychologists call executive control. We measured that and saw whether the poor and the rich differed. But then for half the people, we sort of like tickled them. I mean, not really tickled them, but that's probably unethical. But tickled that part of their brain that had to do with money. So we basically said, hey, here's a hypothetical scenario involving money. And then we gave them the IQ test.
And what was the hypothetical?
If your car breaks down and you needed money to get, you know, repair it, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And then we tested this group post-tickle, so to speak. And what we find was getting the rich to think about money doesn't do anything. They just do as well on the IQ test. Get the poor to think about money, and all of a sudden, their IQ performance drops significantly. So large, in fact, that the next nearest estimate in the scientific literature of something of this size was when you take an undergraduate and force them to stay up all night without sleeping a single wink, you find, you know, something of the magnitude we find. Just getting near the cognitive space of money all of a sudden taxes the brain. And you can kind of imagine why. Oh, my God, I need to make rent. How am I going to make rent? You know, what's this going to... And then all of a sudden, those thoughts interfere and keep us from focusing on whatever we're trying to focus on. The other study was even more striking to me, at least. It was, we didn't tickle anybody. We simply just went to farmers in India before they get their harvest payment and after they get their harvest payment. So now we get the same person when they're rich and when they're poor.
Okay.
And we just measured their IQ and cognitive function again, and we found equivalently big effects. Being in rural India as a sugarcane farmer versus being in a mall in Trenton, New Jersey, I mean, these are such different contexts. And the study designs were so different. But we're finding very similar effects and very similar magnitudes. It kind of really led us to believe that there were some legs to this notion that being poor can sort of tax your mind.
What's happening? I mean, what's going on in our brain when we're poor that is taxing, that does help us make bad decisions?
Put aside poverty for a minute. And I think the mechanism, and that's, our book is about scarcity. So the mechanism that's happening in the poor, we can see in some small way in our own lives. Imagine you go to a meeting, it's 2 o'clock, and somebody brought a plate of cookies. And you're like, should I have a cookie? Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. And then sort of 10 minutes into the meeting, you realize, oh, I haven't really heard much of what's going on because I've been focused on this cookie.
This has happened to me. Yes.
It's happened to me as well. This is the part of psychology that's more like get a couch out and you lie back and talk about your personal experiences. But that cookie thing is emblematic of, I think, what happens to many of us, which is certain thoughts can capture our attention and then we're not able to focus as effectively. And for most of us, those thoughts may be cookies, it may be a fight with our spouse, etc. They come and they go. But for the poor, they have a constant drumbeat of those thoughts because there's a constant background noise, a constant concern tugging at their minds. How will I make rent this month? What am I going to do? My kid's birthday is coming up. How am I going to get the money I need to buy them a reasonable gift? And those tugs on the brain are what effectively leave the brain with less processing capacity for everything else.
And how can you break out of this cycle, or I think this tunnel you call it? How do you move out of this space so you can make better decisions?
I actually think one powerful tool is to just change when you make very big decisions. We call this bandwidth. We often neglect the importance of bandwidth in our decision making. And, you know, even if you go back to the sugarcane farmers pre-harvest and post-harvest, in some sense, that farmer could say, you know what, I'm a better decision maker post-harvest. So if there are important decisions to be made, I'm going to make them then and kind of at least recognize that I have these sort of waves of capacity up and down. And this is true of lives of the poor around the world. So being poor doesn't mean you're low income all the time. There are good periods and there are bad periods. So I think just timing decisions would already be a big remedy.
And what does your research point to about better ways maybe to structure anti-poverty programs?
I think one of the things that I find most compelling is when we structure poverty programs, we're always careful to recognize that, well, we don't want to charge a lot of money for these programs because, after all, they're aimed at people who are short on money. And so we don't tax, you know, it would be foolish to charge them a lot of money. But a lot of these programs, without intending to, charge the poor a lot of bandwidth. And we know that they're short on bandwidth. So, for example, you want financial aid. That's great. But to get financial aid, here's a complex form you have to fill out that's 20 pages and that takes a lot of effort. Now you're really sure the form was free in dollars, but was very expensive in bandwidth. And I think that this happens throughout the poverty space, which is we design programs that are taxing in bandwidth and to exactly a population that's currently short on bandwidth.
Sindel Mulenatten is an economics professor at Harvard. Thanks so much.
Thank you.